Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And for those of you who are just listening to the reporting on the arrest of Julian Assange in London on the BBC or on the Takeaway, we will come back to that later in the program and get the Washington view from Jake Sherman and from two guests from Politico, Anna Palmer and Jake Sherman. Why was the U.S. the one to ask for the extradition of Julian Assange? Wasn't it Sweden who for years wanted him on sexual assault charges? So we'll come back to that a little later in the program. But we will start today with a call in for American Jews on your relationship to Trumpism and Netanyahuism. Obviously, after this fifth election now of Netanyahu on Tuesday in Israel, we'll bring in two guests in a minute. One from Jerusalem, one from New York, politically different from each other. But let me pose the caller question first, and you can start calling it. For American Jews, are your feelings about Israel today different than they were 20 years ago? And do your feelings about Israel influence your feelings about Trump one way or another? 212-433-WNYC. Are your feelings about Israel today different than they were 20 years ago? And do your feelings about Israel influence your feelings about Trump? 212-433-9692. Or if you're too young for that question, put that way, are your feelings about Israel today different from your parents' feelings about Israel if you're an American Jew? And do you feel, do your feelings about Israel influence your feelings about Trump or who you might vote for president one way or another? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, the Trump part of this is that President Trump is hoping to increase his support among American Jews for his reelection to more than it was in 2016 by aligning with Netanyahu on everything that Netanyahu's critics see as too hard line about him, right? But that also got him reelected amid a growing sense that there is no Israeli left anymore, practically almost no such thing in Israel as an Israeli liberal anymore when it comes to voting rights for Palestinians and other conditions of the occupation, and the sense among Israeli Jews that there isn't an Arab partner for peace. And Trump is hoping to find a few more points among Jewish voters in 2020 than the 24%, I believe is the number that he got in 2016, just as he plays to the conservative nationalism of other parts of his base. He also risks, however, by way of political analysis, alienating even more liberal or moderate Jews that way. Time will tell how it works out. Last weekend, Trump spoke to an audience of Jewish Republicans in Las Vegas. And you know how Congresswoman Ilhan Omar has been controversial for implying that some American supporters of Israel have dual loyalty? Well, at least twice in Trump's speech, he casually stated the same thing. This is to a group of Americans, Jewish Americans. He called Netanyahu your prime minister. And he said Democrats could leave Israel out there all by yourselves, implying his audience was Israeli when they were American. Here's that clip.
The Democrats' radical agenda would destroy our economy, cripple our country, and very well could leave Israel out there all by yourselves.
All by yourselves to a group of Americans. So that's the Trump 2020 strategy for a larger share of the Jewish vote. Call Democrats anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, never mind what he said about Charlottesville or other things, but that's the line. And here's where he called Netanyahu your prime minister.
I stood with your prime minister at the White House to recognize Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights is something I've been hearing about for a long time.
Very casual, like it's the most natural thing in the world. You're prime minister, but that's the politics of today. There is a global sort of nationalism, right? Mostly white nationalism that becomes ironically a global conservative identity, even as it talks against globalism, talks for particular national identities, Brexit, Make America Great Again. The New York City councilman, Kalman Yeager, who tweeted about so-called Palestinians, like there's no really such thing as Palestinian peoplehood. And we could go on to Poland and Hungary and elsewhere. So you're prime minister, and American nationalism are somehow not contradictory for conservative American Jews in that context, at least as Trump sees it and Trump presents it. And the Jewish vote in presidential elections is not fixed in modern times. He's trying to, because history suggests that he could potentially pick up a few more points among Jewish Americans than he had in 2016, and that could matter in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, wherever. It does swing in a range. Here's a little history. According to the Jewish website Jewish Virtual Library, George H.W. Bush got 35% of the Jewish vote when he was elected in 1988, but only 11% when he lost to Clinton in 92. That's a big swing. That's a 24-point swing in 4 years. Then George W. Bush got 19% of the Jewish vote in 2000, and that went up by 5 points to 24% when he was reelected in 2004. I presume that reflected a certain amount of popularity of the Iraq War. Saddam Hussein was considered such a big threat to Israel at that time. Obama dropped 9 points among Jewish voters from his first election to his second. In that second election, Romney got 30% of the Jewish vote. Then Trump got 24%, down 6 points from Romney. So Jewish Americans vote clear majorities for Democrats for president time after time, but there is a range. And Trump is hoping to pick up a few points for 2020 by being politically married to Netanyahu. So our question for Jewish American listeners, with Netanyahu apparently winning a fifth term, are your feelings about Israel today different than they were 20 years ago? More identified, more alienated, whatever in your case? And do your feelings about Israel influence your feelings about Trump one way or another? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And with me now are Jane Eisner, writer-at-large for the Jewish-oriented New York-based news organization, The Forward, and from Jerusalem, Shmuel Rosner, a New York Times contributing opinion writer, also the political editor of the Los Angeles-based Jewish Journal, and maybe you saw his New York Times op-ed yesterday called Why Israel Still Loves Netanyahu. So Shmuel, thank you for coming on, and Jane, welcome back to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be here. Hi, Shmuel.
Hello and good afternoon from Jerusalem.
Shmuel, should I take from your op-ed that it all comes down to security?
Not all, but a lot of it comes down to security. Israelis in the couple of the last decades tried and failed to achieve security by pursuing diplomatic processes and by looking for different types of disengagements from the Palestinians. They ultimately decided that the best way to secure Israel is to have a more hardline government, and that's why they just chose Benjamin Netanyahu for a fifth term. He will be, this coming summer, he will become the longest-serving prime minister in Israel's history, surpassing Israel's founder, David Ben-Gurion. So you must assume that he's quite popular in Israel.
Take us a little deeper into that. I posed my question for the listeners in a 20-year context. Your article has a 20-year historical perspective that begins with Netanyahu being seen as daringly right-wing in the middle of the Oslo peace process in the 90s that was supposed to end in a two-state solution, but that those views have become mainstream today among Israeli Jews. Can you lay that out for us a little bit?
Yes, in the early 90s, the late Yitzhak Rabin government began what is known as the Oslo process, a process of trying to find a solution for the old conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. This peace process was not highly successful. There were waves of terrorism disrupting the process. Then Netanyahu was first elected prime minister in 1996. He was replaced 3 years later by Prime Minister Ehud Barak, who renewed the attempt to achieve a peaceful solution with the Palestinians. And then in 2000, the so-called Second Intifada, a huge wave of terror attacks, basically eroded or destroyed all hope among most Israelis that there will be peace in our times with the Palestinians. Israelis become very suspicious of the peace process, very suspicious of the Palestinians and their true intentions. This intensified even further when Prime Minister Ariel Sharon in 2005 decided that Israel will pull out of Gaza. It was then assumed and promised by the Israeli government that Gaza will become more peaceful without Israelis controlling it, but the actual result was a constant barrage of rockets and other explosives coming from Gaza and into Israel. Three larger rounds of semi wars between Israel and the now Hamas-controlled Gaza territory. So Israelis, by and large, realize that the idea of a diplomatic process that leads to peace with the Palestinians, or unilateral withdrawal from territory that leads to a peace with the Palestinians, that these two ideas are not truly viable, and hence they decided to stick with an inconvenient yet tolerable status quo. And this is what we see today. This is what the Netanyahu government has All been right. doing for the last decade. And Netanyahu was elected again for that reason, among others.
So, Jane, let me turn to you. Jane Eisner from The Forward. Your expertise is more American Jewry, and I'll ask you to relate this to American Jews' feelings and related even to Trump politics. But basically, anything you want to add to or disagree with in Shmuel's telling of the development of Israeli politics over the last 20, 25 years?
Well, I think we have to recognize that there are several ways of looking at these developments. For example, Israel hasn't withdrawn from Gaza. It's partially withdrawn, but still exerts a tremendous amount of control over access, over the waterways, and essentially the economy and daily life. So I think that's a little bit simplistic to simply say Israel tried negotiations, didn't work, brought around terror, and now we have this harder line government. But look, I'm not in Israel. I'm here. I don't believe American Jews should tell Israelis how to vote, nor do I think Israelis should tell American Jews how to vote. I think what we're seeing is an acceleration of a real separation between the world's two largest, equally large Jewish communities. And if for whatever reasons Israelis, still a minority of Israelis, voted Likud, but if Israelis give Netanyahu this unprecedented fifth term, that is their choice. I respect it. I will seek to understand it, but it's not going to change my political values.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your take as a journalist on the American Jewish diaspora's feelings about Israel over the same 20-year period, 25-year period that we were talking about with respect to Israel. And, of course, I understand that American Jewry itself is diverse, but how do you see that arc?
Well, I think we're seeing as a very serious divide. I think we're seeing an alignment of religious observance with a political viewpoint. So it is probably impossible to walk into most Orthodox communities now and have a discussion that would be critical of President Trump. You relayed the Republican Jewish Coalition's the statements that he made before the RJC. I was not there. I'd be willing to bet that there were a lot more yarmulkes there this time than there were 20 years ago.
Meaning Orthodox Jews.
Correct. I think we're seeing a real alignment of Orthodoxy and Republicanism, or I should say Trumpism, because I don't think there is Republicanism anymore. And I think, on the other hand, we're seeing a real alignment of liberal Jews with more liberal values with the Democratic Party, and that includes, you know, as much as the Orthodox community in the United States is growing, and it is, so are the number of Jews who are not affiliated. And those Jews tend to be more politically liberal and less engaged with Israel. So the Orthodox Jews right now are a sizable minority with a tremendous amount of power, because all the powerful American Jews in the White House right now, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, David Friedman, Jason Greenblatt, all come from that community, but they do not represent the majority of American Jews. Mm-hmm. And while it's true Trump is trying to woo more Jews for 2020, it's not going to make a difference. Maybe a little bit in Florida, but it's not going to make a difference. This is to woo and maintain the much more sizable and politically important Christian white evangelical base. That's what domestic politics is about, and I firmly believe that that is his motivation. That's what makes political sense, not picking up a few more points from the Jews.
And with Jane Eisner from The Forward and Shmuel Rosner in Jerusalem from the Jewish Journal based in L.A. and New York Times op-ed contributor, let's go to our calls with the question that we put out there, which is for American Jews, are your feelings about Israel today different than they were 20 years ago with this election of Netanyahu yet again and some of the alignments that we'll get into and some of the positions that he's taking? And are your feelings, do your feelings about Israel influence your feelings about Trump one way or another? And Max in Queens, you're on WNYC. Max, thank you so much for calling.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say, how my views differ from my father's. I'm younger, so I didn't really have a view 20 years ago.
Yep.
My father was, at one point, very, very pro-Israel, and I'm pretty divided on that matter. I guess because I was brought up, I have an education on what is going on in Israel. I also have an education on racism and civil rights in America. And putting those two things together, it's pretty clear to see that Israel is a nation of refugees. And what we're doing in America is goes against the Israeli and Jewish values, as well as our own American values, racist and things wrong in every way. It's really odd.
Did you tell our screener that your father was born in Israel? Is that right?
Yeah, my dad was born in Israel. My grandparents left Poland fleeing the Nazis. I have two uncles that were born in Germany, and I have another uncle who died as an infant in a Siberian gulag.
And so with that mix of, it sounds like, there's contradictory political strains in your own thinking. What kind of conversations, if you're having any, if you have relations or he's still alive, what kind of conversations are you having with your father about this?
At one point, it was a lot of arguments. I think now that Trump is in office and we both agree that he's horrible and disagree with everything that he stands for. I don't think he's changed much on the Israel front, but I think he's definitely softened his views and become a little more sympathetic. But
your father has softened his views on American politics. And what about with respect to Netanyahu? How does your father see him? Has he kind of progressed to more hard line in the way our guest Shmuel Rosner was describing Israeli Jews in general?
I guess it's a sensitive subject we don't really talk about too much anymore. But I think he can kind of see through the BS a little bit more so, how both Netanyahu are extremist right-wing politicians that are like almost dictators, if not dictators, mm-hmm. you know, in each of their own country, committing, perpetrating genocides or promoting it. And so they're responsible for deaths. There's no around the bush. They're responsible for killing people, both of them.
Max, thank you very much for your call. Kevin in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for making it.
Yeah, so I grew up in North Carolina and have been in New York for about 10 years. And growing up with my Jewish family in North Carolina and the Jews down there, and especially the fact that we have family that lives in Israel, it was always sort of tough to love Israel with blind faith, with love it no matter what. It's just as important to me as being an American was, having family in Israel and, you know, having the state of Israel exist. And it wasn't really until I got older, started to do a little bit of my own research, that I started to question some of the actions taken by Israel and certainly Netanyahu, as his, actions have gone more to the right, I think, and more conservative. I'm just, you know, it just seems to me that there is a rise of Jewish Republicans, to be quite honest, where when I was younger, being pro-Israel was not a Democratic or a Republic thing. It was just a thing that Jewish people did. And now it seems to be a Republican Jewish thing to be pro-Israel, or a Democrat Jewish thing to question the actions of Israel.
Kevin, thank you very much for your call. Let me go back to our guests. And Shmuel, do Israeli Jews, for the most part, after this election, just accept Netanyahu's alignment with the party widely labeled as racist, Otzma Yehudit, which descends from the party that was once banned over there when headed by the Jewish radical Meir Kahana? This definitely was controversial when it was announced recently as part of Netanyahu's election strategy. According to the Jewish news organization, Jewish-oriented news site JTA, the Otzma party head, Michael Ben-Ari, has called Kahana his rabbi and his teacher. Other leaders include former Kahana aide Baruch Marzel, who holds a party every year at the grave of Baruch Goldstein, who in 1994 massacred 29 Palestinians. Rabbi Bentzion Gopstein, who runs a group that opposes marriages between Jews and non-Jews. And Itamar Ben-Gavir, an attorney who defends right-wing activists accused of Jewish terrorism. That from the website JTA. And that party also promotes annexation of the West Bank, not holding it just for security reasons until conditions are considered safe for a land for peace deal. And of course, Netanyahu seems to have adopted that position just in the last days before the election. So Netanyahu's willingness to align with them was not disqualifying, apparently. Was it popular?
It was not popular among Israelis, but you know, we have to separate two things here. There is political tactics, and what Netanyahu did with the Otzma Yehudit party, which was somewhat ugly political maneuver. This is what it is. It was political tactic. This was not an alliance, an ideological alliance of Netanyahu with this party, with this faction of one party. He made a move that is not the most elegant move, but he thought it was necessary to get a majority in the Knesset. And, you know, your listeners ought to remember that in Israel we have a parliamentary system. So there's not one party that wins an election. Each party or each prospective prime minister must gather a coalition of many parties to form a majority in the Knesset, and Mr. Netanyahu thought that that maneuver was necessary for him in order to gather his coalition. Do all Israelis understand it? I think they all understand. Do we all agree with it? Of course not. Not all Israelis voted for Mr. Netanyahu. His party got 35 or maybe 36 seats out of 120 in the Knesset, so that's about 25% of the vote, or maybe 30% of the Jewish vote. But there are many voters who voted for parties that committed in advance to joining a Netanyahu coalition afterwards. So these should also be considered supporters, if not of Netanyahu himself, mm-hmm. then of the Netanyahu position. You know, referring to the calls that you just received, I would like to say that this separation or distancing between American Jews and Israelis, it's not a destiny, it's a choice. And to the...
By whom?
To the extent that it is a choice made by American Jews, you know, it's regrettable and it's not essential. It doesn't have to be this way.
Jane, you want to jump right in on that?
Well, yes, it is a choice, but I think that it's a choice being made by both sides. I think Benjamin Netanyahu has aggressively distanced himself and at times even derided the things that most American liberal Jews hold dear. Shmuel, you and I both covered, you know, all the machinations a few years ago when there was an agreement to expand the prayer space on the Western Wall to include an egalitarian place for Reform and Conservative Jews. And the Netanyahu government agreed with it and then nixed the deal. It didn't mean much to Israelis. I concede that. It meant a real lot to American Jews. And I know I had the opportunity to ask the Prime Minister himself directly before he officially nixed the deal, and he just dismissed it. He has dismissed right-wing anti-Semitism in America. And most of the anti-Semitism, particularly the violent anti-Semitism that we've experienced in the last few years, has come from the right wing, have come from people who have felt emboldened by the Trump presidency. So I think this goes both ways. There's no doubt that American Jews, I believe to be Jewish in the 21st century means to engage with Israel in some way. And I think too many American Jews have distanced themselves, have become alienated, have become apathetic, haven't sought to really understand, to learn language, to learn about culture. And that's to our detriment. And that is, you know, our decisions. But I think that there have been many shrewd political choices that Netanyahu has made over the last decade especially that he knew, I mean, he claims to know America better than anybody, he knew we're going to alienate American Jews, and he took them anyway. That's fine. He's running a government, and he's running a country, but he's not running my country.
Sam in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sam.
Hi. I'm sorry, I'm riding a bike. I just got off.
we've had people driving a car, and we asked them to pull over. I don't think we've had a caller while riding, but go ahead.
I'm Israeli born. I came here as a young child. I'm an American citizen. My political beliefs are basically social democrat in the European style, but believe it or not, I'm an Orthodox Jew. I've always been an ever-Trump. And basically because I'm a citizen of a country that brought us Abraham Lincoln and FDR, I'm ashamed of having a president like Trump. And I guess as an Israeli citizen, I would say a little bit the same about Netanyahu, that a country that brought us Ben-Gurion and Golda Meir, I'm not too proud of somebody like Netanyahu either. But having said that, I think that it's not a good comparison. A Trump and Netanyahu is not a good comparison. We're talking about Netanyahu as an intellectual giant, a world-class diplomat, an academician, somebody who's extremely capable. So I think that to that extent, he's not. There's no comparison.
You see Netanyahu as an intellectual giant?
Absolutely.
Because?
I don't think anyone doubts that in terms of his academics, his education, his knowledge. He was finance minister in Israel and really credited towards Israel's recovery. He's absolutely no concern. And he's no comparison. And I think to a certain extent, Trump knows that. And I think he's intimidated by that.
So what do you think of, as somebody who has, I gather from what you're saying, you're more from the left, but you have a certain respect for Netanyahu. What do you think of Trump trying to politically marry himself to every one of the most right-wing things that Netanyahu does? Does this cause any dissonance for yourself and your own politics?
I think the dissonance that's caused by me is I don't understand the thinking process that's going on in Israel. You know, people in a foreign ministry who've gone through so many American administrations know that this is eventually going to change. And I think it's a terrible political mistake to ally yourself so strongly with a party that is definitely going to be out of power, but may one day actually be, as I forgot who said it, being a dustbin of history. Why would you want to be connected with somebody like that? You can accept everything he offers, but you don't have to show such camaraderie. I don't think it's politically astute for the Israelis to do that.
Sam, thank you very much. Shmuel, I'm curious, as a conservative-leaning Jew with a foot in both countries, are you offended by Trump's dual loyalty implications of calling Netanyahu your prime minister to a group of American Jews last week, or saying Democrats would leave Israel out there by yourselves to a group of Americans?
Well, I'm not insulted by it, but of course I don't think this was a proper way of describing the relations between these Jewish Americans and Israel. However, you know, referring to what your last caller just said, I understand the many people in America who feel intimidated or offended by the fact that an Israeli government is having such close ties with the Trump White House. But the other side of this coin is the many things that the Trump administration did for Israel in the last 2 years. Think about the strategic decisions in favor of Israel that the Trump administration made in the last 2 years, starting with the moving of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, continuing with canceling the nuclear deal with Iran, which most Israelis and certainly the current Israeli government believes is detrimental to Israel's security, continuing with recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. And just last week, the Trump administration designated the Iranian Revolutionary Guard as a terror organization. These things show that the Trump administration really has true affinity to Israel and is willing to go a long way by way of, you know, helping bolstering Israel's security, and expecting an Israeli government to reject such such moves, to reject such friendship, would be unrealistic. This is not something that any Israeli government would do. If you have such good friends, such ally in the White House, any Israeli government would gladly ally with him and accept this friendship with great appreciation.
Let's go to another caller. Aviva in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Aviva.
Thank you for such an important conversation. My father, my whole family were amongst the founders of Israel in the very early years, and he broke with many of his friends, including in the political realm, over the settlements specifically. And I think what's being left out of this conversation is what is so abhorrent to liberal Jews in America, including myself, is this land grab that they just have no conscience about. It's horrific. But I don't blame all of Israel for that. I absolutely do blame Netanyahu, who has moved so far to the right, and the crazy Orthodox Jews that are there.
Well, we shrink from calling groups of people crazy here, but Aviva, what do you see?
It's just very frustrating because it's just so unfair.
I'm curious for you and with your views, if you see people in your own circles moving more toward the right on Israel over time, you know, among your Jewish American friends, colleagues, relatives, or kind of being polarized toward the direction that you are?
I think people are definitely being polarized. What I think is a tragedy is that people are conflating the right-wing settlement movement with the entire state of Israel, and they do not understand the distinctions.
Aviva, thank you very much. So as we start to run out of time, let's end kind of on that question. And briefly from each of you, Jane Eisner and Shmuel Rosner. Shmuel, what's the long game here? I mean, everybody has said for years and years and years that it's not sustainable to do what Netanyahu says he wants to do, which is to annex many of those settlements in the West Bank, to permanently occupy the Palestinian territories and not have Palestinians have the right to vote for the leaders, like in the election this week, who have so much political power over them as a permanent condition. What's the long game? How does this end?
Well, explaining the long game with the West Bank in 1 or 2 minutes would be very complicated. But all in all, it's clear that Israel does want to control as much territory as possible with as little occupation over people as possible. Israel does not want to absorb the Palestinians and make them Israeli citizens. It also does not want to hand away territory and risk its own security. So how to maneuver, how to manage such complicated situation, that's a tricky question, and we have a huge debate over it in Israel. I would refrain from you know, the fact that people have been saying that this is an unsustainable situation. They've been saying this for 50 years, and clearly it is sustainable, at least for now.
Well, it's sustainable,
so
I would
show some caution in thinking that we know in advance what's going to happen between Israel and the Palestinians in the next 50 years.
Right. Well, it's sustainable from a power imbalance perspective. But Jane, last word goes to you on the same question.
Well, I agree with you, Brian. It is sustainable if you live far away from Palestinians in a mostly Jewish neighborhood. You know, most Israelis don't have contact with Palestinians anymore except in a military context, and that is tragic. It's understandable because of the security barrier, which did decrease terrorism. That's true. But it is also led to a population being isolated and oppressed. And I don't know, even if it might be diplomatically sustainable, I do not think it is morally sustainable.
And we leave it there with Jane Eisner, writer at large for The Forward, and Shmuel Rosner, a New York Times contributing opinion writer and political editor of the L.A.-based Jewish Journal. Maybe you saw his New York Times op-ed yesterday called Why Israel Still Loves Netanyahu. Thank you both very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.